Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dan apparently told us that he's not going to be here. We're waiting for three more.
Okay.
Times of living, so we suggest that I should run into some of the informal and serve it. Let's hope. Really good report.
Very good. Anytime you want, I'll leave it.
Okay, well, I guess those are the opening comments by definition. Do we have any visitors, any guests that want to speak?
No.
And there's a fair chance we won't have four, but just three more, maybe two or three, who said they would be here and haven't told us that they would not, if they could. We can't approve the minutes. We can talk about the annual report. Does anybody have any comments about the annual report?
You will have to vote on the annual report, though.
Well, don't we need to have a quorum?
You need a quorum, right?
So that's true. So we can wait to see if the other three come in and vote.
So you're on.
Okay, give me construction updates.
Good. I read them, by the way, comprehensive. I have some comments.
No problem. You can ask them in whatever you want.
Yeah, just go through it.
Sure.
Get the right page.
Should I get in the microphone?
I'll just start with the overall program update and give you metrics where we are. We have 5.11 billion contracted or spent to this point. We've got 1.17 billion remaining to be contracted. And we've expended already 4.64 billion. We completed 222 of 402 planned projects. So we're well over 50% there. And 595 of 832 sub-projects.
Are you following the material, or are you going to...
Right now, I'm giving you the program update, and then I'm gonna move through, kind of give you the big overview, and then I'll go into my good news, bad news spiel, and we can get into the thermometer report. I think that's what you held up in my glasses on. Currently, we have 40 projects under construction and 45 sub-projects under construction. And in design or development, we have 35 additional projects and 50 sub-projects. I'm going to talk a little bit about procurement that's going to be coming up in the next few months and what we have rolling out. And then I'm going to digress for a minute. But first, I'll start with, in October this month, we've got about $8.5 million to award. And that's going to be for the Valley Central plant. It's a design-build contract. And it was awarded this past Wednesday. Now, we do have a protest on that, if I'm not mistaken, John. And we're still looking into the merit of the protest. We just received it one day before the board voted on it. But this is kind of a good news story. It's our real first test of our new protest policy that we put into place.
Which including your RFPs.
Yeah. Before we were getting so many protests, there's a real culture of protest here. And one of the reasons was we were giving them essentially three bites at the apple. And they could really bring the project to a halt in the procurement to a halt. And oftentimes it was not worth our time to go through it all, we just throw it out and start over. So that's what's happening in the past. John and I rewrote the protest policy so we can still award, keep everything rolling, so nothing comes to a standstill, so the momentum keeps going. And then ultimately, if there is merit, then we will have to entertain the protest. If we find none, we just keep going. But it is ugly.
But you could still pursue it in
any event. Sure. That's you know, they can always do that. But we'll do catch it before then if it's the merit of the claim. In November, we've got $10.7 million to be awarded. That's going to be here. We're doing the Grand Avenue Blue Line. And that's partially funded with federal transportation money. So we had to do that one design build as well. They only allow you to do certain types of procurement, design build works for us on that.
Is that a new station, the blue line?
Yeah, it's a real, kind of a realignment.
Is that what you described as, Bill?
And then also in November, we're doing central plant here. It's going to be about $7 million. We've already received best and final offers. And we're planning on taking this to the board in less than a month, November 4th. We'll take it to the board. In December, we're going to be awarding approximately $95 million worth of work. The vast majority of that will be coming from the Firestone, the big Firestone job out there. It's about $63 million of that $95 million. Also, we're intending to award the Da Vinci Hall at City College. That's $18 million. The RFP has been issued already, and we're wanting to go to the board in December with it. In addition to that, at East College, we have an ADA compliance procurement that's at $8 million. And we'll be awarding the architect of record for the digital arts project at Pierce. And we'll be awarding the demolition contract to take down this horticulture building that's essentially a greenhouse and it's about 1,000 years old in really bad shape.
It's horrible.
We'll be taking that down. Pardon me?
It's horrible.
It is horrible.
It's the first thing you see, too, when you come in and off the one road.
I'm trying to tear that thing down since I got here. I think it's the first time I visited that college. It's that city. And then in January, another big month for us will be about $66 million. We'll be bringing on a new OSIP broker, our own owner-controlled insurance program. We'll be looking at the Cesar Chavez building at City College. Also, an emergency lighting and fire alarm at the city for about $4 million. There'll be at Southwest College, the School of Science and Math. This is a very slimmed down project from what was originally intended. I think we originally budgeted around $30 million for this. It's going to be about $13 to $14 million. That's just due purely to not running out of money. So it's severely slimmed down, but they just don't have enough money to buy anything else. So we're going to re-diagram it in a sense so that we're not taking up, there's not any space left to build except this one big square out there because they have so many fault lines. So we're going to put it kind of on an edge, not take up the whole thing. So if they ever have an influx of capital for some other reason, or they could add on to this building and make it bigger for the use, because it's not really going to be big enough for the use.
I have a question about the fungibility of awards you've made to individual schools. When you run into a situation like this, where for whatever reason the funds are not sufficient for the original plans, in this case you chose to keep your money moving this way.
That's correct.
Buying for a more modest building. Do you ever, if you consider that you make an award to a school, even though the rules change, they can't do the money?
We don't have so
we dedicate that money. Are you awarded to another school? Or is this sort of a compact? No, we gave you the money, let's figure out what to do with it.
You know, internal politics would drive that, and that would be above my pay grade to take. For instance, to take the $14 million and put it on another campus. It's especially sensitive at Southwest, where they felt that they were underserved and undercompensated. So it would be a real difficult decision that somebody would have to make, the board would have to
so
make.
So it is in theory possible, but it's a political decision.
Yes, sir.
Or at least it has political consequences.
Yes, sir.
That would be the chance for them.
Yes, sir. Because a lot of the communities that supported the bond originally believed that they were getting this amount of money, or that they were getting the chunk of money, and to take the money away would really, and the community and everything else would be very upset.
I understand. Just wanted to know. There was a written policy, and there is.
I certainly wouldn't talk out loud about it if I had any ideas. I would wait for somebody to tell me to even try that. And then also in January will be the Pierce Automotive Capital Improvement Program. It's the automotive building, but there's also a lot of other projects we kind of put together on it. It's going to be about a $30 million project at the end of January. Now this is where I'm going to digress briefly and give you an update. This is a very, very big challenge to this program, and it's going to affect us very negatively, and it already has had some impacts. And John, I'm sorry if I go off script a bit. Was it in March, John, that the case was first? I want to talk about this Fresno case that happened up in Fresno using lease-leaseback, which is our preferred delivery method right now. And there was a case, and then I'll let you take it from there when it's clear.
So we actually spoke about the lease-leaseback delivery method at the last meeting. And it's a method that over the past 15 to 20 years has been widely used by both K-12 and community college districts because it allows the public entity, to make what's referred to as a best value selection, as opposed to you must award the contract
with the least acceptable, the lowest price,
the lowest responsive and responsible bidder. And so a multitude of K through 14 districts have been using the lease-leaseback method. In October of last year, we had a case come out of the Court of Appeal called Los Alamitos, which said that it was the first case ever to even address lease-leaseback, although the statute's been around since the 70s. And it said that lease-leaseback is a legitimate alternative delivery method, construction delivery method, to competitive bidding. So that was a good case. It dealt with the statute for K-12 districts, which is 17406 of the NCO. Community college districts have a separate statute. It's 81335 and a couple of additional statutes. And then a few months later, or 8 months later, in June of this year, another Court of Appeal decision came out called Davis versus Fresno Unified School District. And the Davis Court looked into the statute and went back into the statutory history of it and made two fairly broad and wide-ranging pronouncements. One, that in order to use the statute, there has to be a contractor financing component to the construction. And two, that you must have what that court called a true lease, meaning once the improvements are completed, the public entity has to take possession and then pay rent. It found those two broad pronouncements, the decision states, in the legislative history of the statute, because nowhere in the statutory text itself are these things mentioned. That threw a huge monkey wrench into the use of lease-leaseback, because everybody's shaking their head saying, well, what does that mean? How much does the contractor have to finance? How long does the lease have to be a true lease? And it's just unknown. It's unidentified. And so there's just these broad pronouncements. The Supreme Court denied review in September of this year, despite a whole bunch of community college districts, K-12 districts, contracting trade organizations filing briefs with the Supreme Court saying, please take this case up and explain it. Anyway, the problem is that it creates some uncertainties now, and we have been using it very, very successfully in the program.
And a lot of other people.
Yeah, as well as a lot of other districts. But now, with the uncertainty being raised by it, we're going to back off from using the delivery method for a while. Well, we're going to ask the board what it wants to do, but our recommendation is probably going to be to back off until we get a little bit more certainty, either through a further court decision or some legislative enact.
Isn't there, in this history that was used as precedent to establish the rules, doesn't the history also provide data as to how much the component pays, what percentage of the liquid?
No.
No data.
It's absolutely silent.
And there's no higher legal authority to challenge the fact that a vague law is not a law and should not be issued.
Well, that's we were hoping.
Supreme Court is the only route.
Yeah. Yep. Other than the legislature clarifying the statute.
Are you looking at that?
Yes, we are. So it's a shame. There's also some other legislation that's being put into place as a pilot program for LA Unified, which is a best value selection statute.
We're going to also look at that and see perhaps if we couldn't get almost the identical legislation passed for a pilot program here at the district. So that would be a help as well. And in the short time, we're going to be before the Facilities Master Planning and Oversight Committee on the 21st of this month, presenting them with the options, getting their input, and then seeing what the full board wants to do, probably in closed session on November 4th. So we'll have a little bit more direction then. But as of right now, we have six projects, four of which have been awarded pre-Davis, but really haven't gotten too far along. Two more that are actually in the procurement process, and depending on the board's direction, you know, we may have to cancel, re-procure, modify, do something. So it's causing concern, it's causing time, it's going to cost us some expense, but it's an unfortunate court decision, but we have to live with it for now.
You assess the financial impact of living with it.
What do you mean?
Well, it certainly does, depending on which direction we go, there would be additional risk if we were to go back to the design, make, build, mitigate type of strategy. Oftentimes that carries with it not only quality issues, but the risk of litigation. We've never litigated anything with lease back in my history.
But I think you're a financial risk too, you don't know the extent of that financial risk in the proceeding. You spend money in the face of that unknown risk. And so what I'm really asking, and I'm doing it for my add-on as well, the committee
sure.
Wouldn't this be the time to consider ways, first of all, estimating what the risk might be in financial terms, and so, which is hard to do, I think. The question is sort of the question. And the second thing is assess whether or not suppose that risk is $20 million and you don't know, but you have to stop some of what you're doing. Okay. So if you need to fund it.
Now we're going to have to do that. Generally speaking, it's a rough order of magnitude, but because you see under the lease-leaseback, you can have that general contractor and their larger subcontractor trades get involved with the designer and tighten up the drawings, the design drawings, as they're developing. So what it means is that when you finally price them through an open book process, you're getting pretty accurate pricing. And with very few errors or omissions and ambiguities and conflicts in the drawings. So that means they're going to sail into a job and probably not run into anything unforeseen unless it's under the ground or whatever.
This is too close to the turbulence.
Right. And that's what but under the design bid build, where we can't have them working cooperatively with the architect, they just bid on what's in those drawings, and to the extent that there are errors or omissions, then they have to be solved during construction, which is always timely. Now, in rough answer to your question, Elliot, on new construction, that risk can run between 10 to 15% or 8 to 15% of the original contract price for a project. On renovation and modernization, that number can be as high as 25%.
$1.25 billion on spec, right? So I'm just saying 10%, that's a big number.
Certainly is. And that is, we had gone to the lease-leaseback method because it was such a cooperative, cohesive, you know, just common sense approach.
And that was also present.
Yeah.
What was being used?
Oh, it was being used a lot. Being used a great deal. And, you know, some districts are still using it, but you don't want to be that test case scenario and be splattered all over the front page of the LA Times.
Okay, so, well, doing the right thing, we're estimating the cost and how to do that.
We're seeing the caution, and we're going to look for other reliefs, and John mentioned some of it, that there is some legislation for LAUSD under the governor's desk. We're going to take a hard look at that and see if we can do our own pilot program and try to get it pushed through, so some legislative reliefs.
How would that relieve you from the...
It would be a new delivery model, if you will. Pure lease-lease, or pure best value. So you wouldn't have, I mean, we use the term lease-leaseback, and it's really a financing mechanism, what it's originally designed for places that didn't have the money to build. We, of course, have the money.
but we treat our lease payments are almost like regular progress payments. So, you know, you don't really need a financing component, we don't need any of that. But we use it because it allows the selection.
Right.
So this would be actually a more pure method of what everybody tries to get around. And then, of course, design build was, you know, the thing here for a while because they didn't believe they could use these things back. And that got them around the hard bidding. So everybody's looking for a solution to it. And, you know, we think if they've already seen the language and the stuff that LAUSD put forward, that maybe we can sail it through on the community college side. And we want to do it just for us. It'll be easier if we just run a pilot just for our organization.
Pilot being everything construction, or pilot being one building construction?
We would do everything left in the program, or have the ability to utilize it for everything left in the program.
So it's not a pilot that's restricted.
Well, that's what you'd ask for.
Anything we build, but just us. No other community college business.
We don't want anybody else screwing it up and reflecting poorly on us. So that's a huge deal, and it's something that we've got to come up with. And we were looking for all kinds of solutions before, and we just came to the conclusion that there's too much risk, so we have to talk to the board about what direction we want to go. The good news. At East College, the Student Success and Retention Center is an $85 million design build project, 135,000 square feet of LEED Gold certified. We're going to take substantial completion at the end of this month. So that's a win for us. It's a big one. But the college will likely not occupy it until February. That's the date that they're shooting for, February 2016. Also at East College, there's a new student bookstore. That's a $40 million design build. It's 54,000 square feet of LEED Gold. It has a cafeteria, a bookstore, a multi-purpose room, faculty and staff lounges, student activity center, meeting rooms, student government offices, health services. And that's, we're taking substantial completion of that at the end of this month, at the end of October. And once again, they will likely not occupy until February 16th. At Mission, we are finally, this has been a long time coming, we have a design build contract issue and held a kickoff meeting, and the notice to proceed has been issued to Rudolph and Sletten for a central energy plant, something they desperately need out there. They have real problems with their operations costs, and I believe they're the only campus without a central plant. Am I correct in saying that, Tom?
Yeah, well, this college here.
That's right, we're going to have the virtual. That's right. So we're one of two colleges without a central plant. So it should be a relief for them on some of their operational costs. At Pierce College, there, you may recall there was a stalled project for a number of years out there that the contractor pulled out and just left a big mess up there. Well, we've issued the contract and we've begun completing it. The first one was the stadium ADA improvements, $15.3 million. We've already taken occupancy of the fields, the football fields, and the field house in August. And we've taken control of the parking lot, and we anticipate the substantial completion of that project by the end of this month. At Southwest College, the project that I was discussing earlier, we also call it SOMS. It's the School of Math and Sciences. We have an architect, a programming architect on board, so we're just beginning the process with respect to that. And they're coming in, and the good news is that architect is somebody who's already on site. They were part of a design build team on site, and we're gonna build this large, much larger project. When the project got smaller, the contractor wanted out. They're a very big contractor. They didn't necessarily want to be in there for a $13 million job. But we retained the architect, who's Carrier Johnson, and the programming should be complete in mid-November to get started.
Yeah, I don't understand how you operate. You had a contract with someone.
Yep.
The size of the contract changed.
Yep.
You wanted out to let them out.
Yep.
Was there a provision in the contract that allowed that?
It was essentially, you know, it was a cardinal change to the contract. If you look at it, what we did there, I mean, it was a...
It's a new contract.
Yeah.
So I think we're all moving over the term.
So it was an amicable separation, it wouldn't make sense for them to stick around for that size of a job.
It wouldn't make sense for them to have that new company.
That's right. Now, if here at Trade Tech, we're updating the master plan, we have to get it put together and get it moving. Currently behind us is the parking structure that was stalled. If you look over there now, it's now moving again. So that's going to be completed in about a year. Next August is when it's scheduled for completion, so it'll be ready for school.
Structure to replace all those parking lots?
Well, we're renting space right now because there's no parking. So it's actually costing college money every month. So it's an important one. It'll leave them with some operational costs as well. The Culinary Arts Building on this campus is another of their big sexy projects. It's their last of the big ones. Now, we had a competition for that, and McCarthy was selected as the builder, which I'm very excited about. Good track record with this, done excellent work. But this is one of the ones that may fall into that or the lease-leaseback problem, because we procured it under lease-leaseback. So John and I are constantly banging our heads and talking to different attorneys across the state, different community college districts, different K-12 districts to see if anybody has found a solution or a silver bullet. It hasn't been the case yet. We would like to maintain the relationship with McCarthy if we can find a way to another delivery model that would work. So it's a bit in jeopardy right now. In addition, we have the Grand Avenue Blue Line extension we talked about, and the project is in procurement right now.
Is that the one you referred to before, the real line?
Yes, sir. Out at Valley, we have the big VAC project, or what was formerly known as MAPA. It's a large theater. We had a competition. The contractor was awarded. The contractor was awarded to Pinner Construction. They can do the work. What we have run into is the initial estimates coming back from us was more than our budget. So for the next 90 days, we're working with the general contractor to align our budget and their cost, which means we're looking for valued engineering opportunities. We don't want to reduce any of the scope, but we're trying to bring them more in alignment. There's some gold plating on that building. Stephen Ehrlich designed it. Ehrlich is he's a black cape kind of guy, very creative. So we have panels, for instance, for the facade that are from, we have to source them from New Zealand. Well, is there an alternative to stainless steel handrails? There's, of course, I think some kind of glazing system from Germany. There's those type of things that we're looking into that if we can find a different type of finish that helps us reduce the price and bring it down. Also, we believe that when Pinner actually goes to actually buy off the trays, that we'll be saving probably another $5 million on that we're looking to, and several other opportunities. So we're going through all of those right now, and the value engineering practice will be brought back to the campus and look at the alternatives to see if they're acceptable. So it's, I probably should have put that in it. It's not a troubled project, but we've got a lot of work to do to bring that delta back online as well. So, and it's also a lease leaseback, that's not one of the four. There's an athletic training facility out there right now. It's $32 million. Clark is doing a great job. We're taking partial occupancy of the parking in the fields already. And substantial completion is scheduled for the end of December. It's coming along nice, a good project. And they're going to occupy it in February.
That was our first lease-leaseback project.
That's right, that was our first lease-leaseback project. At West, the EIR addendum is being circulated right now. And we'll be bringing the EIR to our Facilities Master Planning and Oversight Committee in November for board approval in December.
Construction start in January?
Well, we have another
construction plan.
This is another lease-leaseback. We awarded Balfour Beatty out there that would essentially clean up almost everything that's left on the campus as far as work is concerned. It's another one of the projects we've got to figure out what we're going to do. Some of the challenges I think
the big one that I wanted to get out, I've already talked about, and it was that case, the Fresno case. But that's a big one. We also have a challenge at City College. It's at the Holmes Hall. I reported on it before. It was a shear wall issue. When we got into it, you know, it's a modernization. So when they got into it, they got down to a shear wall that had a bunch of penetrations in it, and the structural integrity of it was brought into question. We've been working with the designer and DSA and our structural engineers to remedy it. The contract has been very good. They're looking for solutions as well. We finally believe that we have a solution from DSA, but there is going to be an impact for approximately 7.5 months, and $1.5 million is probably whereabouts we're going to end up with all the delays that we've run into on that. But we're still looking for a substantial completion in March of 16. The mission media. I'm sorry, sir.
Because that's an adjustment.
The Mission Media Arts Center, this is the thing that's been sitting still out there that we got going again, that we're now moving in. We're actually putting in real work. So as opposed to taking apart the building that we've been doing for the last 2 years, we're actually adding to the building now. The real trigger here is we have to be at 50% completion by March, is it, Tom, on Media Arts?
Yeah, in order to get the rest of the state funding.
To get our state funding. So we're at 47% completion now, so I don't think it will be any problem to get there by March that we're able to receive our match.
I had a phone call today with the project team out there in Kelly from the PMO, and they expect it to be over 50% by the end of this month. Excellent. So we will be way ahead of where we need to be to save the state funding.
Good. That's great news. And right now, John's roughing up the surety out there. So at Harvard College, I don't know if this is really a problem, but they've decided not to do what we had termed the old admin building. And it was a $17 million contract. They don't have the money. So what we're doing there is
they don't have the money because the projects are planned to do more.
There's other projects that cost a lot that went over. And
what college?
This is at Harvard. Yeah. So we're deferring the whole administrative renovation. And that kind of makes up their shortfall by canceling that project. They were short. But what we did do is the contractor that we awarded to the design build entity, we left some scope in their contract still, and it has to do predominantly with ADA issues along. So they'll at least have something to do. We've received the credit back already from them for it. American with Disabilities Act.
Okay.
So it has to do with accessibility on the campus, making it accessible for everybody. We had I wasn't here. Someone told me I was not here for the rain event. We had a rain event. And it impacted negatively, may have impacted a couple of buildings. The City Student Services building, we're a little concerned about that. The City M&O tennis courts required just to go back and put another storm drain in underneath the courts. The Valley Monarch Center, you know, there's issues there. Then there was at the east, we found that they had the storm drain that had been put in prior that we were utilizing went from like an 8-inch pipe into a 6-inch, is that what was put in, Kurt? So they necked down the storm sewer, and so we were getting overflow. It's a capacity issue. So we're going back, re-engineering that, redoing something else in there. So, you know, rain events are sometimes good when you find these. Oftentimes you want to find if something's leaking or if you're going to have a problem before the building
goes. I'm surprised they put a too narrow pipe.
Well,
all these things are calculated. Huh? All these things are calculated.
Yeah.
You know, from a 130-year rain.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's raining from here.
Yeah. No, it's an engineering exercise. Will it be fluid dynamics or no? Depends on what's that too narrow.
The fluid dynamics are talking about. While you're contemplating, let me ask you, the meeting's the very important question. Let's assume that this leaseback problem exists, just assume. I've got a lot of things in motion that you've gone through, which are taking place in any event. And you also have a reserve. Okay, your reserve is a 5% holdback.
Well, we have reserves and contingencies on the individual projects.
Project by project, but also don't you hold a central reserve as well?
We do, but it's never been enough, and they recommended we retain $430 million. I think we actually retained 140, and we're not even. So we've still got to manage so tight.
So the question that leads to is you have to manage very tightly the individual projects and use what you have centrally in great discretion. And that's before the lease back issue, the latest back issue, Fresno issue, got several things. Okay, so I'm concerned, I really am, and I know you're doing your homework, so I'll re-emphasize what you said before the show. We hope to hear from you soon as to the evolving status of this, because it could have significant, just like you said at the beginning.
Absolutely. We're doing everything we can as far as trying to find a solution to this.
Well, the solution is obvious. If it's costly, you're going to have to change something that is changeable. That doesn't mean it's easy to implement.
No. And one of the concerns I have is the four contracts that we have ready to go, that we have good contractors on, that want them to proceed. And I don't want to lose the time. I mean, you know, time is money in this business. So we're certainly, I mean, all eyes are focused on that.
Have you finished your summary?
I'm sorry?
Have you finished your summary?
Sure.
Let me ask this question. The next thing we ordinarily would do is we could go through some of the materials that we have. I've done that. Okay. I have a couple of questions. I'm asking the rest of the people here, the members of the committee, do you want to go through this page by page? Who wants to go through this page by page? Anyone? Okay, then in the interest of time, I'd like to ask my question.
Absolutely.
Most of these have to do about, is the data accurate? Is it inconsistent, as I think it might be? And you just provided me with the lead in. And the lead in is as follows. Go to the first page. And you go to the second row, which is Ellen City College.
Okay.
You show a budget variance, which you define to be the difference between the remaining budget and expanded budget and the estimated completion.
Okay.
You show it as zero.
Yep.
And you said something just before, which is quite true, that I was going to ask you about. You show that as zero, yet if you look at the schedule status of the program, you have one component, which is not a big component, but it raises a question. If I'm reading this right, okay, red line shows where you are. The blue shows that you're in construction. And the little arrow shows where the previous estimate was that you were going to complete this project. It's clear that's not going to be the case. So you have a program whose schedule is lagging the plan. And as you said correctly, that's going to have a budget impact. So my question is the budget impact of the money that's not going to be completed on time, and therefore it's going to be more expensive as a result of that, included in the budget variance?
Yes. Okay. Yes, this is something that we take into account. And where we've extended the timelines or where you'll see a delay, as long as it's not owner caused, what we're really paying for is the soft costs associated with the CM management, which is still
also more people would be on the program for a long period of time.
That's it. Well,
that may be soft costs. It could be expensive as well.
That's actually the cost we're looking for. If we have a cost delay, then we don't have an exposure to the general contractor. But the delay is having that soft cost or that staff on.
I just think I heard you say that the contractors are firm fixed price contracts.
I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't hear you.
That the contractors are firm fixed price contracts.
Yes.
So they have to absorb any delay that was not caused by them?
Essentially, yes. I mean, there'll be delays that are non-compensable, in which in case we'll extend their contract, you know, for another 30 days. There could be delays that we cause, in which case they be owed the money, compensable delays. For instance, that shear wall we talked about, something along that lines, that's going to cost us.
But we can go through this budget variance for every program. Mm-hmm. You have monitored the expected consequence of projects that are not on schedule. Mm-hmm. They're late.
Yes.
Some of that cost comes back to you.
Yes.
Okay. But it's all in that budget variance.
Yes. So that's where the EACs are so important. And in the past, we didn't do a very good job of keeping the EACs up to date. I mean, it's one of the most important indicators that you can possibly have on a construction program, because, you know, I'm glad your estimate was this at the beginning and the contract was this, but what's it really going to cost at the end of the job?
Right.
The EAC, estimated completion.
The EAC is the estimate.
Estimated completion, yep. But when you take it into consideration, any additional costs, delays, anything along that lines will be reflected on that.
Do you know if you award a contract, those are not helpful?
No.
Award a contract, those are not helpful.
No.
So EAC may not be the actual completion?
No, no. Well, the EAC is, so when you award the contract, you expect, let's say it's a $10 contract. We expect it to get done by, you know, for $10. They run into a burial ground and they start. It's delayed by 2 months. Okay, now the EAC, the next time the project manager projects it, will indicate that delay. So it's now an $11 project.
Okay, so your EACs change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct, yes.
Okay.
And that's why they're so important. And that's why we insist the project managers are always providing up-to-date EACs.
And you also include the consequences. I don't know if you're better, but I want to bring it out. You also include the consequences of schedule changes.
That's correct.
For which you have to pay as well.
Yes, sir.
The EAC too.
Yes, sir.
So you feel your EACs are accurate, and therefore your budget variances are accurate?
I believe so.
Okay, now, then if you look at, so thank you, great set of answers. There are means of contracting where EACs, once established, never change.
That would be a perfect project.
That's not true. EACs do change.
Yeah.
But there are bad estimates. The initial EACs are bad estimate of the final actual. But you do.
But it's not a bad estimate. It's
no,
the estimate
at
the time.
The systems that you see the EMS works differently. That's why I'm asking. Now, do you have a budget variance for LA Mission College of $2 million?
Okay.
It's a negative variance.
Yes.
Okay. So, for that school, although the subject I've spoken about the information, but for that school, what are the consequences of that?
Well, the $2 million would also include, to give you an idea, we have in there an amount for risk. Every project carries a certain amount of contingency or risk. And what we'd be hoping for is this is kind of the worst case scenario. We want to reduce the risk, take the money, and funnel it back into the projects as the progress.
Is that from your reserve? Or from
the reserve? No, it's from reserve at the campus. It's what we keep in there.
Okay. Why is there a variance at all, given that you have the agencies?
Because that's what it's telling us we would be at the end of the program right now.
So
at the end of this program, at that college, this is where we're looking at the deficit right now.
Well, in terms of your booking, if I followed you, and the next time you issue this, okay, you will adjust the EAC so it's variance to zero.
We'll adjust it so it's accurate. So it's reflecting, so it could theoretically get bigger if we hit something else out there. You know, if we have more exposure, we run into another big change, if there's a big change order for some reason. It could get worse, or it could get better. So as we manage the risk, as the risk becomes more and more clear, we can reduce the contingency and hopefully bring that number in time.
Okay. So it's healthy, budget variance is zero, budget variance is negative, it's a sign you gotta do something.
Yeah, it's a sign the college has to make some decisions sometimes as well. You'll see on the Trade Tech one, for instance, that we're not gonna overspend by $8 million. okay? But the college is going to have to make some difficult decisions with respect to when they update, I think I mentioned in there, their update to their master plan and the EIR. They're going to have to make some difficult decisions on what projects they're going to defer.
That'll show up in the master change of this.
Yes, sir. So to get it back, because we need to be in black on all of it, obviously.
So for example, the last report we gave you showed East as a negative budget variance of about $220,000. Now it's positive.
East.
Just as an example, so that one changed from negative to positive since the last report.
There'll be a
change in plan.
We made an adjustment.
There'll also be a lag when we're carrying the negative variance while the college is making those decisions.
Of course.
Then it gets trued up.
And we want them to see those red numbers because that means that they've got decisions to make. And we need answers in order to continue the project. So we haven't committed to anything that we don't have the money for. That's what we will not do. And that's why
we're going to do that. These red numbers shouldn't be planned. You made these.
That's correct. Right.
But if you look, if you stay with Trade Tech, the budget is $235 million. They've contracted for $214 million. So that means there's still, you know, another $21 million.
Which in principle,
not contracted.
Correct. But they've got $30 million planned, but they have $21 million. Right. So hence the delta.
Right. And so that's indicating that the college needs to make some hardcore decisions on projects they'd like to build or may not be able to build. And that's telling us that where they're going right now, if they stay on that track, they're going to eat up an additional $8 million of the $21 that's left on contract. So that doesn't leave us very much money to do something else.
But we would never award anything that would let them go in the hole. I mean, we don't do it. They have to have the money in place.
Control them such that they take steps to reduce their variance and eliminate it. The EAC never changes, is what I'm learning now. Before I thought you said it could change.
It will change constantly. It's a dynamic number at the EAC because, as I said, if we hit a right of woolly mammoth bones out there tomorrow, then we're going to get a delay claim. And it's going to cost more money to excavate the woolly mammoth, and then it's going to rain, and then the footings are going to get flooded. And, you know, so it's constantly changing. As we become more knowledgeable about the project, we alter the estimate completion to take into consideration any credits or debits that are necessary.
So it tells us if we're running on budget, under budget, or over budget. If we're over, but the EACs are needed to get us to the variance.
That's right.
So, yes, they have to be accurate. This is what you think.
That's why they're always changing.
And that's why it's such an important function and metric to have.
How do you deal with that in a non-building situation like energy on the same page? Energy has a nice, positive variance. And nothing has a negative variance. So what do you make of the positive? What do you do with the positive variance, assuming it's the EAC is accurate? What that says is when this project is energy category is over, you're going to have another $560,000. Mm-hmm. You apply that to the building programs that you need to?
We probably won't be spending it. I don't, Tom, we don't have any other energy projects planned, correct?
No, any energy projects we got left are part of this construction project. They're not standalone projects.
And did, if I'm mistaken, but did we give them some money out of this bucket up at Mission so they could actually build the central plant?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
So we helped out from the district wide. They have up at Mission because they didn't have enough money to even build the central plant that we've got under contract now.
Going back on the next page, okay. Tennis courts.
Okay.
Your sample plan doesn't show when it's complete.
It doesn't show what? I'm sorry.
It doesn't show when you're going to complete. Look at the tennis.
This is going to be likely a phase opening. I think it shows that we're completing the first quarter of 2016, which is accurate, as I reported earlier.
It's Well, it said should be closed out. But then I'm confused because several months later, 2017, shows you reconstruction.
Are you looking, you're looking at tennis courts?
Tennis courts, 0152.
Yeah.
Look at the top line. Indeed, it says you're closed out. Following the coasting at the end of 2016, but it says you continued after that. Using your symbology, we have blue means in construction. It shows you're in construction on something in the latest period.
I'm looking at, mine says that it's going to be complete at 2016, Elliot, at the end of 2015.
Excuse me, I meant the landscape proportion.
Oh, okay. Landscaping. What I can tell you about this one is that we have not even, still broken. I don't think we've issued this contract. This is one of the last contracts. This will be after everything is built, and then we're going to go into and clean up everything and put out the hardscape.
Okay.
And do all the
I can't read this and see when you're going to close out this project, because you can give no symbol that says that you don't have a new symbol.
Well, it goes out past 2017, it'll be the very last thing we do on that campus. So if this extended out to 2018, it would probably be reflective of that. It's going to be everything's torn up out there, you know, from all the different projects and once they're built, construction zone.
Okay, so it's right to say that the final date is not on the schedule.
That's correct, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, I think I have one more question on page 22. Mm-hmm. You say, what page are you on? 22.
Amanda, I'm sorry, I don't hear well, so.
Where I have.
Forty years of riding motorcycles. Closeout period with the state as well, and it's a process actually.
What I'm really asking you is, what is the last day of construction? I can't determine it, so I'm just asking.
Yeah, I would say. I can't give you an accurate answer right now because the real project in here with the is that technology learning center.
I have a reason for asking about that.
Okay, that Technology Learning Center contract is composed of the majority of the work left to do on West.
Okay, and so it's going to be scheduled that it's in construction through the end of 17.
Yes.
Now, I attended a meeting at West LAX, conference, so to speak.
Yeah.
We had a meeting this week.
Okay.
And the people there said there would be no construction at the going into 18. Unless they got awarded something new. This says something different.
Mm-hmm.
So all I can say is...
Well, this comes from their schedules.
Right. All right, then I have to go back and speak to them. Thank you.
You got it.
Anybody have any questions? If they want to ask about this. And I guess the three people who booked Mike come from that line. So we're still not in an official meeting.
Would you like us to provide the program management office is going to provide their annual report, if you want us to do it now, or prefer that we wait for another meeting?
No, let's do it.
Okay. Go ahead, this is Bill Sewell, he's a program director, interim program director for us.
Starting off on page two.
This is what this handout looks like.
All right, yes, all right.
And so, it says Program Management Services, PMO Annual Update.
Okay, not the annual report.
It's an update. If you don't have one, I'll get you one from the front desk.
Program Management Services.
Can you direct us to page two?
Yes.
Now, let me ask what this is.
Is that from another side of the table?
This is a supplement. The annual report.
This is our annual update.
Are you on this one, the PMO annual update?
No, there's two of them, that's why.
That's what I have about this today.
I am now.
Good.
Okay. So, this is an overview update of PMO activity for the last.
So, it includes what's in the annual report?
I don't see the annual report, but I'm assuming it does.
Well, the annual report closed out into your.
You're referring to your annual report, right, Elliot?
Right.
Yeah, any of the information that you get will be coming, it'll be from the same source.
Right, exactly. So this report is June to June, June 2014 to June 2015.
So that then is a continuation, it's the next, this is going to be the next year's. This kind of information.
Yes. So, over the last, since the beginning of the program, actually, when we first started out the program, we did a lot of ramping up, a lot of putting in processes, a lot of fixing stuff. And much of that's behind us. So as we turn the corner now, we're just looking to have steady success through the end of the program, get all the projects built and delivered on time, on budget, no litigation, minimum on from the start. So we're moving ahead with that. On page three, you have a financial summary of the program, broken down by colleges, satellites, central services,
page three.
And so here, there are a number of columns. The first column, column A, is the original baseline budget that we started with in 2011. When we came on board got the project, the program more or less under control, we re-baselined the budget to where we are, or where we were in June of 2014. The next column shows the current budget, and thankfully it's the same as the re-baseline budget. We've had no disasters or anything like that happen. And the next column shows what's been expended in the budget remains for these major categories. So then if you take that first line that says colleges, and you go to page four, the next page.
But the accounting will go through just the two four status of the section. It has two extra columns. Okay, one of them is estimated information.
Correct.
The other is variances.
Right.
Would there be any reason not to include this in the next issue of this report?
The only, in the next issue, we can do that. Absolutely. Yes. This was for just reporting kind of where we are monetarily rather than going through the account. But we'll do that. So on page four, there's a breakdown by college of each of the original budgets, re-baseline budget, where we are currently, what's expended and the budget remaining. So that's giving some insight college by college of where we've been along the way.
Same request, estimated completion.
Yes. On page five, what we have there is a strategic similar to the financial study that they just looked at, except that the strategic execution plans look forward at what's coming down the pipe, and the numbers don't include things like projects in closeout, owner's reserve, things of that nature. The strategic execution plans are looking at where we're going from today forward.
And so, projects and subcontractors?
Yes. So city has 21
projects. What's the difference between new usage in the contract and the subcontract?
It's actually projects and sub-projects. So there may be a project
on a
wall.
On a building, and there may be a sub-project on the cafeteria.
Correct, exactly. Yeah. Best example, North of Mall, there's 7 sub-projects inside that North of Mall project. Okay. This also gives you a breakdown of projects in their various phases in planning or procurement or design, construction, and closeout, just to give you an idea of the relative size of some of these procurements and projects.
The budget shown to the right of subcontractors remaining.
Yes.
That the budget for the subprojects?
It's the budget for the projects and the subprojects that those contain.
So it's still the budget.
Exactly. Yes. On page 6 is just an update of the procurement of the work. Jim went over a lot of this already, but $339 million in total procurements awarded from June 14 to June 15. $208 million in new contracts awarded in 2015 so far. And there's a breakdown of $197 million in construction, $11 million in design. We've been able to save some money for the program by cutting down the amount of time that we spend in procurement. So when we first put the project over, it was 185 days from the time we started procurement to we got a contract award. And we brought that down to 116 days. Some significant savings.
Sure. It surprised me the fact that we had maybe 1/6 of our money to be spent on the original budget, something like that, that only 14% of the projects have been closed out. I would have thought it would be more.
That's the project phase status at the end of June. 2015.
I mean, if they're already closed out, it's not reflected on here.
Yeah, right?
Means it's still, it's in the ones, closeout is a phase, and they're in the closeout phase currently.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, if this was, as of today, okay, what was that 14%?
Could be lower, it could be higher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I would expect as you use up the money, more things are getting closed out.
If they're already closed out, they're not included in here. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
This closeout represents an activity. It's a verb. So it's a process. Am I?
It's a snapshot of time.
So of the existing projects, 14% are in closeout.
That's correct.
Which doesn't preclude the fact that many had been closed out.
That's it.
Correct.
All right.
And I think we'll further on we'll get into some answers to that. Last bullet on page 6 is zero protest. Well, now we've had one. It came a couple of days ago. But hopefully that will be handled without any problem.
They ruined our perfect record.
We did.
After this was mailed.
Yeah. So,
that's the one who's responsible for that.
Right. On slide 7, we talk about our local, small, emerging, and disadvantaged, and better-known business participation. Of 297 total companies that we have under contract or as subcontractors to our prime contractors. 178 are the local small emerging businesses. So 60% of our task orders are awarded to the LSEDB community.
Do you want to read that as either local or small or emerging or disabled?
Yes.
Does that have all those properties?
Correct. Correct. Right. If you have one, you're in. So, page 8 is status of our internship program. We have an internal rule of practice, I guess is a better term, where we only use LACCD students in our intern program. And so we have a number of interns working on our sites. We have a number of interns working in the PMO. We also have a number of interns that have been hired by our partner companies in the PMO that are working elsewhere, but they're LACCD students. So we have a pretty strong push to get students employed.
Do they get any credit, college credit?
They don't get college credit, but several of them have gotten full-time jobs. So, yeah, there. I think the last batch of 10, we kept 3 or 4. They were really good, and we kept them on. So on page 9, we talk about projects being closed out, and here, projects being closed is achieving DSA certification. So we have a 21% reduction in projects that have been closed without certification, and which is a great improvement. And we have a couple of people who we call DSA specialists. They understand that whole process really well, and they have the contacts within DSA. So we've been able to work with them to reduce our bin time, which is the time that project sits over there doing nothing, by 50%, so that we can get our close out faster, get our certification done faster. Page 10 talks about safety. One of the things in safety is the recordable injury rate is something you want to be as low as possible, so the lower is better. From 2013 to 14 to 15, we've actually lowered our goal. And so far in 2015, we're doing extremely well. Our recordable rate is only 0.28. And our goal is to be below 3.2.
Does this impact your insurance?
Absolutely. When the OSIPs put a price to your insurance program, they certainly look at your safety program, take that into consideration and success of it.
So it went up from, the actuals went up, even though they stayed within goal, from 13 to 14.
They did, yeah.
And figures to date suggest that you can do a lot better.
In 2014, we replaced our safety man. We replaced our safety manager, and the goal suddenly improved. So on the next page, on page 11, it's just a report on our MNDR program, which is metering and demand response for energy management. This is the first project that started with the current PMO, was done by the current PMO, and finished. And very, very successful. It finished on time, on budget, no litigation. And we're now looking at how we can use this new capability to save energy, save money for the colleges. We don't have statistics yet because it's that new, but we're working on putting a program together to do some measurements. On page 12, our key performance indicators are listed there. They're mostly green until you get to time to execute change orders. There's two things going on there. The first one is we set some pretty harsh goals for ourselves. So we're working very hard to meet those. The second thing that's going on is some of the change orders are tied up in claims, and so they just don't move because they can't. So we're looking at how we can split that out and measure that separately from some traditional change orders so that we can really tell better how we're doing. Same with construction schedules. They're red because there were delays built in through the moratorium and things like that. And we're actually measuring the entire construction schedule. So if the district stopped construction for several months, that's included in here. So getting these back on track is tough. So we're working on that as well. And of course, both of those things drive risk. And we have started a program now to get a better handle on how we record risk, how risk is reported, and then how we do the calculations to get a true picture of risk.
Excuse me. What do you mean by risk?
Risk is looking at things that can go wrong. Doesn't mean they necessarily did, but we have a risk register, and we record all of the risk and their probabilities, and then there's a model program that's done by ACOM's New York office that gives us our answer of what our risk is for.
Since every project is unique, every project carries with it unique risks.
You're talking about risk as far as it getting done on time, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. And costs associated with it. For instance, you would and when we talk about risk, there's a correlation to the amount of contingency that we keep on each project. If you're building, let's say you're building a warehouse in the middle of a green field somewhere that's virgin soil, it's never been touched, it's nice and flat.
Okay.
You know, you might set aside 5% risk. And they're calculated. I mean, everything's a risk. And they're individual items, and then there's money attributed to the risk. Now, if we're building it in the middle of a old petrochem field, you got to worry about piping. Maybe there's abandoned pumping piping you don't know about. You have to worry about contaminated soils. You have to worry about maybe the terrain's different, soft soils. So we would then take each of those little line items and assign a dollar value to them based on probability, and then the dollars associated with it. As Bill said, it goes into this big algorithm, this big model, and then it kicks out a number at the end of the amount of money that you should have set aside in case anything was to happen, including the probabilities.
So Pierce got unsatisfactory for 2015.
Yeah.
Well, so they didn't put another one inside.
No, is what this means. This is a different. It means that they weren't updating it accordingly. So we want our folks in the field to update the risk logs and risk registers regularly. And if they don't do that, that's when they get the bad skill.
Okay.
So it's more associated with the administration of the risk, not the actual risk itself.
That's
important. If you take a look at your budget in EAC areas, this document says there's only one variance for this document we just discussed. Shows that there are negative variance in four schools. So there's a different interpretation or a different time scale or a different something.
Well, once again, Elliot, this is measuring the performance of the log and the updating. Meaning, meaning, are they updating? Remember how I said
earlier? I got it.
We want to truly look at
it. We just change the title of the report. It would communicate more clearly this chart. College key performance process indicator.
Okay.
Just put in the word process then.
Okay.
You know, it's good communication rather than answering all those questions.
Got it.
It's measuring logistical success.
Excuse me?
It's measuring logistical success, or the process
success.
Right.
Logistics have many meanings. The process is
process. Okay.
On
page 13, we list our
theories. You know, can improve your processes, they won't materialize into real expenditures.
So in 13, we talk about our internal and external assessments. These are basically audits that are done. We have two or three audits ongoing on any given day. We've just finished our KPMG performance audit for 2015. Every indication is there are no findings. We've got a couple of little, you didn't put that in the right column and stuff, but no findings.
We're not going to avoid it.
Yeah.
We're still got a little bit of time. Yeah, it's of course not finalized yet, so I don't want to get too excited yet. But they reported that.
They've always, from year to year, they've always improved.
That's the way we want to trend.
Right. So then on page 14, we talked a little bit about our process improvement and transparency, and a big thing is the website that you saw last meeting. Last meeting. So in the meantime, and forgive me for saying this again, but I'm really proud of it, we've won two pretty big awards.
These very recent.
Because you were seeing it brand new. That was brand new, and since then we put it out to the public. We probably won two pristine, big deal awards for websites.
Right.
But those are the ones you discussed in meetings.
I don't think we won the awards yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this was in the last.
Oh, we won a couple more awards, by the way, a few weeks ago on two other projects. Two out of six awards given in California. We won for the program.
Right.
That's terrific.
Right.
So there's an international group, and the name of it escapes me, I apologize, but it's kind of like the Oscar for websites, and we got two awards out of 4,800 entrants. So pretty proud of that.
How many awards were there in total?
There are like 10 or 12 lined up.
See, here's the process we'll be going for.
There you go. So then our 6-month outlook, again, reflects what Jim's already presented. We've got about $230 million in new contracts projected through March of next year, 20 new building occupancies, and 15 DSA closeouts estimated in the next 6 months. On page 16, we talk about our program savings and cost avoidance. As I'm sure that has been said before, our goal is to save as much money as we cost, so we're a zero cost to the taxpayer. We're about 70% there. So at 50% of the program, we're 70% to our goal. So it's just some examples of some of the things that we've done in procurement efficiency and IT standardization, master plan format revisions, standard operating procedures do a lot every day to keep us on track.
The big deadline that you spoke about is not on this chart. It should be what you start the chart with. We are exceeding our rate. That's the big deadline.
Okay, yeah. Good point. Page 17 is just some feedback from our Voice of the Client. This is from various college presidents and folks who were interviewed back in April, May of this year, 2015. That's it.
Again, don't be shy about your awards. As a customer,
we were just out adding something else. I was invited, program was invited to the Construction Management Association of America to their national conference, which is going on beginning of next week in Orlando. And we've been asked to present on three different entire topics. And that was out of a competition of several hundred applicants. And they've asked us to do three separate presentations with regards to our program.
All this is good stuff.
Thank you.
So yes.
Our website award was the Academy of Interactive and Visual Arts. So it was website Academy Award. $4,800.
No, we can't do that. We have a short difference from this one. Is there anything else we should discuss?
I don't believe so. We've included in your package the strategic execution plan update. This is for your information. This is for your information.
Let me just add one thing.
Yes, sir.
I know the reason, why the chancellor's not here. I don't think the vice chancellor should be here. In case of the chancellor, it was something amazing. That is the West LA president who left to take another job in San Diego, his hometown, his wife's hometown there. And the chancellor went to the West LA college and spoke to its faculty and said, look, we can't have a long period of time where this campus does not have a president. And there's a lot going on, and which is not to say there aren't a lot of things going on in other places. But I want you to bring me your recommendation in 3 months. I've been allowed to run faculty for one time. I was at USC and Associate Dean. I regarded that as impossible assignment. Faculty don't move that fast on questions like this. They're picky. They want to get a lot of applicants, get one exercise that. It's being finalized now. And if it's finalized with the chance of being a very happy participant, if it is finalized this month, it'll be within 3 months. So I'll be prepared for that. But I think that's good. Okay, I guess we're finished then, unless anybody has a comment. Thank everybody for coming here.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Elliot, for taking the lead on this. I appreciate it.